Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Game and you're listening to the Small Business Advocate Show, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Ed Marsh is here. Ed's back, and he's a founder and principal of Consilium. He's a keynote speaker, a consultant, and also a veteran, which we appreciate very much. And he's here to talk to us about a topic. We've talked about the subject, but not this term before. Ed Marsh, welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me, Jim. It's a pleasure to be back with you.
Always a pleasure to have you back. Intent data. We've talked about the subject because I know what this is, but we've never used that term, intent data. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so there's a lot of people that aren't familiar with the term, but they are familiar with the concept. And really, if you boil it down, the point of intent data is about observing, collecting, and analyzing observations about people's activities. So, you know, we've all used intent data for years, sitting in a meeting when somebody crosses their arms, That's some manifestation of intent. If somebody visits your trade show booth, that's a manifestation of intent. Of course, as everything has or so much has moved online, that means now that the primary focus of observations is online. And so people think of their first party intent data, in other words, the stuff that they observe through their systems, through their own social channels, through their marketing automation, through the trackers and cookies on their website, all that kind of stuff. They think about that, but, you know, there's 2 billion other websites out in the world, and what's happening on some of those that might be relevant to you?
Mm-hmm. No, that's exactly right. So I never thought of intent data as body language online, because that's really what you just described, isn't it?
That's exactly right, and I think that's a term that I sometimes use, digital body language, where then I see people smile and say, okay, now I get it. Now we're taking it out of the realm of, you know, this kind of marketing digital theory and putting it into real-world marketing and sales.
Right. So what you're talking about is, whereas, you know, once upon a time we did mass, you know, we did broadshot stuff, then we've tried to focus more. And this has helped small businesses to be able to help to focus their marketing advertising budget more. You're talking about getting very, very granular, aren't you?
Yeah, granular in a couple ways. So statistically, and there's, you know, the numbers vary, but there's a general kind of consensus that only 3% of the potential buyers for any product or service are in market at any given time. And so most of the marketing stuff that we do, whether it's, you know, very valuable content marketing or paid search advertising, is focused on a much larger kind of casting a broader net, if you will, because we don't know who those 3% are. Mm-hmm. And that's always been the holy grail of marketing. You've heard people say, I know I'm wasting 50% of my marketing budget. I just don't know which half. Mm-hmm. So if we can get closer to knowing who those 3% are, the people that are in the process of wrestling with a problem, looking for solutions, talking to your competitors, thinking about how to achieve an outcome to you know, a business outcome, then we're much closer to talking to the right people. There's still a lot of work we have to do, but now we're kind of focused on the right group.
So how do we do this without being creepy?
Well, so there's 2 parts to the creepy. One is whether people are concerned about the fact that it goes on, and the other is how you use the information. Mm-hmm. So there's different ways that intent data is collected, and some, I think, are problematic, and some are very straightforward. There's a method that we use, in fact, that's based on observing the actions that people take online publicly. Mm-hmm. So they're doing it out there for the whole world to see. They're commenting on an article. They're sharing something. They're liking something. That's out there for the whole world to see.
I'm going to call that fair use. Because if people, fair use is an intellectual property term, folks, if you didn't know. And so if somebody is making something available in the public domain, you have fair use of that. But this is part of why I wrote my book, the third ingredient, where companies now have the ability to be creepy, to do, I call it, you know, there's post hoc and a zoot prius. Post hoc means what you just said. You find out what they've already said after they said it, and if it's in the public domain, you use it to your advantage. No harm, no foul. Ut prius is where you have the information either before, well, mainly before they intended anybody else to know about it. And that's where that's crossing that line is when you become creepy, right?
I think that's a reasonable way to look at it. The other piece of the creepy is how the sales team and marketing team use it. And I've seen clumsy, awkward, inexperienced salespeople that take intent data and call somebody up and say, hey, you told me we were going to have the deal. Why are you talking to such and such a competitor?
Mm-hmm.
And that obviously doesn't work very well. On the other hand, where people are at the point.
So now we're talking digital ethics. Now we're talking about digital ethics.
Well, and common sense, you might say.
Yeah.
But if you say, hey, you know, experience tells me people in your position are probably more and more worried about this kind of a problem and maybe looking for solutions, maybe we can help you, then you've got some insight and you're putting the right information in front of them the right way to help them. And I think that's actually a service that you can do.
Well, exactly. And so, folks, an example of how not to do this would be like if Alexa hears you say your car broke down, and the next thing you see on your phone is an image for a new car. That's ut prius. That's the creepy part. That's the wrong way to use it, isn't it?
Well, I mean, people feel differently about it. What I can speak to is the way that I advise folks to use intent data, and it's to look at what appears to be their area of focus, what they need help with, and if you can legitimately help, then to begin to share some of those ideas.
And you're saying, for example, if someone asks a question, where's the best place to get my transmission fixed, or should I buy a new car instead of fixing my transmission? If that's posted on Facebook or somewhere like that, you're saying that that's the kind of intent data you can capture and then approach them.
So the specific platforms, are part of our proprietary algorithm. We use only publicly accessible information, and it's only for B2B. So perhaps for your community, another example might be if we see somebody sharing information about how they're looking for help with us of how to create a statement of cash flows.
Right.
That could be somebody that's looking for small business accounting software.
Mm-hmm. Hold on to that thought, Ed. And folks, Ed, this is a company you formed, right? Intent Data?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. Give us the website, please.
IntentData.io.
Folks, this is an important thing that you need to be part of your life. Ed and I are just talking about how to use it.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.